Well, hey everybody, welcome to episode 263 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it is brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Their integrity guides their focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. They pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Their network of resources allows them to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, we're going to talk a lot of Ankeny baseball here in a little bit, but right now my first guest is a realtor at Coldwell Banker, and he's been a frequent guest on the podcast. He is Tom Butler. Tom, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
It's always a pleasure to come in. Doing great.
Well, how's your summer going thus far? I know we're just kind of underway here, but how's it going?
It's awesome. I mean, with all this rain, my water bill's down. Everything's looking green. It's warmed up. It's sunny. It's great.
Well, you got any big plans for this summer?
Not anything, no big trips. We go to Clear Lake in August and spend a week there, and that's kind of fun. But other than that, just hanging out with the family, riding the motorcycle, and trying to get some real estate done.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yeah, my wife and I were taking a weekend trip to North Carolina this weekend, and then we got a family reunion in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee over the 4th of July. So not huge trips, but a couple of fun getaways. So.
That'll be beautiful.
One of your Cubs are in a four-way battle right now for second place in the National League Central. You know, they've been up and down, to say the least, haven't they?
Yeah, they took off like a house of fire, and then all of a sudden they can't beat the Reds. I don't know what's going on. So now they're bumping along 500, and it's the middle of the season. So you just take the good with the bad and see what's going to happen down the stretch.
Well, did you have very high expectations for them this year?
I really didn't know. I mean, I'm a longtime Cubs fan, you know better than that. So when it looks like they're going to be really good, they're not. But I mean, I had reasonably high expectations that they're going to do well. I mean, I think the cards being down a little bit, it seems like, is our ticket to go somewhere and do something. And then you get the Brew Crew coming in and doing their thing. So, I think at this point it really is wide open. And it's who is going to get the bats going, who's going to lock the pitching down, and get a run going.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from my Twins. They've been a crazy team. They had a 12-game winning streak and then like a 7-game losing streak, a 5-game losing streak here last week. And they're 4 games over 500 right now, so I can't complain. But I didn't think they'd be 8 games out of first place at this point either. So
yeah, like you said, with those runs, things could go from a four-game lead to 4 games back pretty quick.
Well, hey, I know you follow Caitlin Clark too. You know, what do you think of all this latest news about her? Were you surprised that she didn't make the Olympic team?
I don't know that I would say surprised, but I just can't be more proud of the way she's handling herself. I mean, in the midst of all of this stuff, and who knows really what all of the stories are, because we know that there have been rookies that have played on the Olympic team in the past and all that stuff, and she is just a catalytic person. There's not been somebody like her at the WNBA that has drawn so much attention. And because of that, I mean, she's a lightning rod, and she has been able to keep her head down and do her thing, and she knows that she will have an opportunity down the road. I personally think it was an incredible miss for them. I mean, can you imagine having this generational player on the world stage for the Olympics now? I mean, that would have been the best of the best, and mm-hmm. yet they chose to pass on that. That's hard to understand.
Well, if they wanted the attention, they certainly would have put her on the team.
But exactly.
I hope it ends up being a good thing for her. I do think she could use a break. And I just continue to be amazed at how she's just such a lightning rod for news. Whether, you know, if she made the team, that was going to be big news. If she didn't make the team, now that's all they talk about. I mean, I turned the local radio station off yesterday because they kept talking about it like for half an hour. And I'm like, okay, we get it. She didn't make the team.
Well, what media outlet isn't talking about her from news programs to sports programs to your local? Everybody is talking about her. And I think, you know, I think this probably is for her personally a good time for her to have some downtime. I think the team is, from everything that I've heard, they're going to win the gold anyway. So that's a done deal. And she can go get some rest, sort of collect herself a little bit for the rest of the season. And in the end, it'll be just fine.
Yeah, one of the things I heard was that the reason they didn't put her on their team is they were concerned, like, if she didn't play very much, that there would be all the blowback from her fans. Like, why isn't she playing more? It's like, boy, if that's how you pick your teams, that shouldn't be your criteria.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that logic, so.
Well, let's talk a little bit of real estate. We had Rhonda Dix on the podcast last week, and I know she felt like she was seeing some positive signs, coming up this summer. You know, do you share her optimism about the market going into the summer?
I don't know that I'm optimistic, but we have seen a spike in activity. The inventory levels have come up probably 25% off of the lows that we had been seeing. Right now, homes that are priced right are selling. Homes that are a little bit overpriced are not selling. There aren't a ton of buyers out there in the market, but there are buyers out there, and we're seeing that. I think it's just very cautious. When we got the jobs report last week, it caused the interest rates to pop a little bit, and it just seems like we're going to be in this interest rate right around 7 for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I think when somebody says, you know, is it the right time for me to buy or sell my house? A house. It comes down to the individual and their story. I think it's more important probably than ever for somebody to get counsel on a host of issues of, you know, what's your financial position? What are your long-term, short-term goals? I mean, you need somebody to really counsel with you about the overall decision rather than just find somebody to help you find a house or find somebody to help you sell your house. There is so many factors that go into it that are complicated by the market that we're in right now, and that you could make a mistake. And it could end up costing you. It's really important to get some good, wise counsel.
Well, you mentioned that the homes that are priced right are selling right now, and the ones that are overpriced are not selling. So is that not always the case?
Not always. I mean, when we were coming through COVID, I mean, you could throw any price on a house, and it was just bizarre. And when before the costs really shot up, you could get away with that. But now with the costs being so high, the home prices have not imploded. And so they're still up there along with the interest rates. That makes it tough. If the housing prices would collapse and the interest rates were high, then you could afford it because the prices are low. Or if the prices stayed high but the interest rates dove down, then you could afford it as well because people are buying on the monthly payment. But with both of them being high, it's just a really challenging time.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that you advise people to get expert counsel. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you to get your advice, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, I always say the easiest way is just my email, and that's my name, tom@tombutler.com.
All right, Tom. Well, thanks a lot for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. MJ Properties is a sponsor of the podcast as well. And MJ Properties is also the title sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic, and we certainly appreciate the support from them. All right, well, my next guest is the longtime head coach of the Ankeny baseball team, and he has guided the Hawks to a 7-14 record thus far, including a 2-9 mark in the CIML Conference. His team is coming off a 3-2 loss at Valley on Monday night. He is Joe Ballvans. Joe, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm great, Dan. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. Well, I was at the Centennial game last night, so I wasn't at your game, but it sounds like a game, you know, that you guys could have won, but you just didn't get enough clutch hits, did you?
Yeah, both pitchers threw well. Jeff Rose has been a long time, so he's thrown for a long time for Valley. We kind of knew what we were going to see there. He executed his pitches and had a plan, and we did a good job early of getting his pitch count up. I think he was around 40 after two innings. And that was the game plan, is get in there and grind and get in a bullpen, see what's behind the Rose kid and see what we can scratch across. And also I'll tip the cap to Jack Clevidence. You know, that was his most efficient start by far of the season. Not trying to muscle up and throw things by people, just executing pitches and letting his defense work. And it's an athletic defense behind him. The guy sitting to my left here, Kinnick, does a nice job. The outfielders with Earlmeyer and Moorfield and Clevidence and a couple other guys sprinkled in there. We get two or three strong catchers with Bernie and Henry. And Brady Carter's come on and done a really nice job when asked to. So our goal right now, like you say, is how can we be productive when guys are in scoring position and have good at-bats, and what's our approach look like? And right now, You know, our approach isn't real consistent for the ability to score 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 runs a game. And that can make it hard. It wasn't like we were ever out of that baseball game. We were up 2-0, and then we turned around and we kicked the ball around a little bit, and guy had a big hit with people in scoring position, and you know they did what we haven't been able to do recently. So,
well, this has certainly been an up and down year for you guys. I know your record isn't where you'd like it to be, but you know, even if you were say 14-7 right now, you know the goal would still be the same, to be playing your best baseball at the end of the season. And I know you feel like this team, you know, has gradually made some progress in different areas, haven't you?
They work very hard, and they're wonderful kids to coach. They come from wonderful families. The 7-14. Like you said, if it was 14-7, we'd still be doing the same things at practice and in the games and stuff like that. So we're just going to keep plugging away one game at a time, one inning at a time, one out at a time, and continue to work and push them to hone their skills at the plate in the field, throwing the baseball, and just keep them competing every pitch, playing a pitch ahead, limiting damage on defense. We talk a lot about on defense, can we – if the other team scores, usually it takes three bad things. Three bad things being we gave them a base runner, they got a base hit. And so if you're going to score, it usually takes three things in an inning, unless somebody runs into one, mm-hmm. right, hits one off the wall. And we try to avoid that, obviously. But just getting them to be like, oh, recognize there's one. We've got to tighten up and not play tight, but recognize, hey, I got to get this next one so we can move the inning along. And you've known me long enough. I'm an out counter. I'm counting backwards from outs from game one. We get that first out, I'm like 20 outs to go. Okay. Again, they show flashes that they can play with anybody in the state. We were up 3-1 on, I think, is a pretty good Dowling team and couldn't finish the job in the seventh. We went toe-to-toe with what I think is the longest lineup I've seen, and we've played some pretty tough competition. If you were to look at the schedule, the longest lineup I've seen is out there at Cedar Rapids Kennedy. If you look at their 7, 8, 9 guys, usually you can tell how good a lineup is by what they roll out to the plate in the 7, 8, 9 holes. And their 9 hole hit one off the bathrooms off us in when we went over to Kennedy. So, but we were right there with them. We out hit them. We got 8 runs off their number one. Baseball's a funny game where you might play well, you might have a good day and still not win. My biggest concern is that we're not, you know, we get geared up to go battle a Valley, battle a Dowling, battle a Centennial, something like that, battle a Cedar Rapids Kennedy. And then we maybe get to a different caliber of opponent, and then we kind of play to that level of competition. And that's what we're working on avoiding right now. But again, they are working hard. They have a positive attitude. Every day they're there, they're doing everything that the coaching staff has asked of them. And we're figuring this out together. There's no quick fix here. We've just got a kid in there, and when you get in the plate, you know, right before I left here, it was my final message to him was, guys, bottom line is when you step into that box, it is a 1-versus-1 situation. It's pitcher versus hitter. Can I beat the guy that's trying to beat me? And that's where we're trying to get him.
Well, yeah, you mentioned your schedule. When you look back at those first couple of weeks, it was really a gauntlet. You know, you guys had that dramatic rally to beat Pleasant Valley in the second game of a doubleheader to earn a split in your season opener. And then you talked about, you know, those close losses to Kennedy and Dowling. And then you opened the conference schedule with a split against Waukee, which right now is probably one of the hottest teams in the state. They've got a 10-game winning streak, and they lead the league with a 10-2 mark. And I know you'll see them later this week. I know you weren't discouraged by, you know, how your team played during that stretch, but in retrospect, it seemed like you guys played maybe even better than you thought.
Yeah, you just hope that they can recognize it and grow from it. I tell them all the time, because it doesn't get us a whole lot better to go beat somebody 15-2. You've in the postseason, you've seen enough high school baseball that usually a lot of times those games are decided by 1 to 2 to 3 runs, and you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable and playing in tight situations, and wanting the baseball hit at you when it matters, wanting to stroll to the dish. Well, yep, guy on second, tie ball game, put me up there. I'll go hit a line drive somewhere. And that's the mindset we're preaching. That's the mindset we're trying to teach. I hope we're gradually getting there. I think we're gradually getting there. I do think this group is, I've seen the less talented Ankeny groups from an athletic standpoint win a sub-state final. It's not the athleticism part. It is getting in there and being competitive and being productive when it matters.
Well, one of the highlights of your season came on May 29th when you swept a doubleheader at Ames by scores of 12-0 and 9-0. And I know Ames is rebuilding a little bit after placing second in Class 4A a year ago, but you know, you had to feel really good about where your team was headed after that doubleheader. It seemed like maybe that was a turning point.
And you can ask Kinnick to my sitting here to my left, but I thought that was hands down their most complete doubleheader that they've played. At-bats were great, and we didn't see bad pitching at all. We saw the Jeffrey Kidd game two, and he came out there and just, I think he struck like the first six or seven dudes out, and our guys regrouped and gathered and were able to scratch a couple across and went get him off the bump and win that one. And the first one, you know, was the best I've seen him swing it all year. They were couldn't wait to get to the plate. Good at bats, getting bunts down, executing when it mattered, and you know, that's how. That's a team that played for a state championship last year, and I know they graduated a lot. They're working in some young kids out there, but I was still encouraged to see them come out and play like that. And I'm pretty sure we kind of had a rough one the night before, if I recall, or we had a day in between on Monday. We had kind of had one that didn't go our way. So building resiliency, building that mindset of so what next pitch, playing a pitch ahead is our focus right now.
Well, after that twin mill, your schedule did get a lot tougher. Your team then lost its next six games, and the first five of those losses came to top 10 teams in your conference, Johnston, Southeast Polk, Waukee Northwest, and Centennial. You know, you guys are competitive in all of those games, but this league is just so tough that there really isn't much margin for error, is there?
Well, Kinnick, I say that about every day, don't I? Yep. You hit the nail on the head, Dan. Your margin for error in the CIML is about as thin as it gets. And all it takes is a play here or a play there and seven inning game get away from you. You know, the older I get, the faster these seven inning games go. But yeah, being able to compete and stay into those little games within the game and trying to steal an out here or move a runner there matters. 90 feet matters, playing clean defense matters. You know, working ahead in the count matters, battling at-bats, trying to get yourself to a count where I'm not getting myself out on a pitch that I shouldn't have to swing at. Those are all things that throughout these first 21 games that we've played, there have been bright spots, but there have also been little lulls that have kept us. And there's not a team we've played I don't think we belong on the same field with. When you look at Johnson, we had a one-run loss to Centennial the other night. We battled with Kennedy, like I said earlier. They're there. It's just a matter of putting it together on a consistent basis, night in, night out.
Well, after dropping a 9-7 decision at Urbandale on Thursday, you guys fell behind 10-0 in the second game of the doubleheader, and it appeared to, you know, you were headed toward your seventh consecutive loss. It would have been easy for your team to quit, but you guys scored three runs in the fifth, five in the sixth, and five more in the seventh. So you guys rallied for an improbable 13-10 victory that was capped off by a bases-loaded double by Carson Bernholtz that broke a 10-10 tie. You know, how important was it just from a psychological standpoint for your team to come back and get that win?
We talk a lot in the dugout. If you've got outs left, you're never out of the fight. And I'll be completely transparent with you. I was pinch hitting and letting guys swing. We were getting a little thin on the back end of the bullpen with eligible arms, and it was 10-0 in the fifth. And, you know, kudos to those guys for going up and finding a way to get on base and move the line. We talk about that, too, a lot. When your job at the plate is to get the guy on deck to the dish as well. Just move the line, turn the lineup over. How many times can we get through the lineup and good things will happen when you see that pitcher two and three and four times? That's what they did. We got into the bullpen. I'm pretty sure that their kid was perfect through four if you were to go back and look. And we hadn't even really sniffed a base runner. It was strikeouts and soft contact. And I was like, whew, I didn't expect this tonight, but we'll see what we can do and get out there and battle. And I was really proud of them. It would have been easy. Yep. We're going to save some arms, pack it in, and go. And we actually got to a point where in that game, I think Halverson threw like 39 pitches and didn't record an out. And
well, let me interrupt you because we'll talk about that. Cole Newsom gave you four big innings of relief in that game.
You know,
he gave your team a chance to come back. And then you turn to the guy sitting here with us, Kinnick, to take the mound for you. And all he did was pitch three hitless innings with five strikeouts. You know, what can you say about the performance of those two guys?
You know, first of all, Cole had thrown a little bit in JV on Tuesday. He was under 40, right around it. And I'm like, hey, bullpen's getting a little thin. I need you to dress tonight for varsity. And I could tell he was excited. I don't know if he expected to get out there in the top of the first with no outs and six runs up on the board already. But, you know, that young man gave us everything he had, and that's really all you can ask. And I'm tremendously proud of him. He does a good job for us at JV, at the plate and on the mound, out in the field at first base. He's a kid that works hard and does what's asked of him every single day. And he came out there, he took a line shot off the ankle. I was like, oof, okay. I'm not sure what we're going to do now, but I went out there to check on him and he popped up, gave me a thumbs up and came out and gutted a couple more out. And we got to a point where, you know, I think it was 10-3 when I went to Kinnick. I'm like, hey, bud, I know you ain't thrown a bullpen in a long time, but I love your competitiveness and I want you to get out there and see what you got. And he just smiled at me and said, man, coach, I thought you'd never ask. And he's out there throwing heaters and knuckleballs by people. And it was fun to watch. It was entertaining. And game, like, I don't know if I've ever seen a game with two outs in the bottom of the fifth, 10-0 score. And team comes back and wins 13-10. That was wild. It took a little time. That was a long seven-inning game.
I'll bet.
But something I'll remember for a long time.
And we'll talk more about his pitching performance with him. And I know how valuable you think Kinnick is to have up the middle, but I'm guessing we might see him on the mound again, huh?
I would say we'll probably see it again when the opportunity presents itself. Yeah, we're probably going to give that a try here later in the week.
Well, you guys have pretty much reached the midway point of the season, and you've still got a big week ahead of you. You'll go to number 10 Dowling on Wednesday for a doubleheader. Then you'll host another conference game on Thursday against a number 5 Waukee. We talked about them earlier. Then on Friday, you'll host a non-conference doubleheader against Linmar. So you got some big games coming up there. You know, what are you hoping to accomplish this week? Are you just looking for some more consistency?
Yeah, I'm looking for improved approaches at the plate. Being able to trust yourself to hit with two strikes. Getting down 1-2 and being able to battle and elevate pitch counts and put one in the gap, things like that. Not get too high, not get too low. Just stay even keeled and businesslike and be a competitor everywhere you go. Play the game the right way. Respect the umpires. Take care of the facility you're at and be a good person. Be a ball player.
Well, you've already seen all the top teams in the conference at least once. I mentioned the role that Waukee is on, but the Warriors are ranked behind two other teams from the conference, number 2 Centennial and number 4 Johnston. Now, the Jaguars have a big doubleheader against Waukee on Wednesday, so I imagine the Warriors might be a little thin on pitching by the time they come to your place on Thursday. But from what you've seen, you know, who do you think is the best team in the conference right now, and who do you think is going to emerge as the champion? You maybe don't care, but...
I certainly do care. I am probably one of the biggest fans of CIML baseball that's out there. And even last night, you know, you see Brad Rose's kid out there throwing pellets, and I've known Brad for a long time from my days at Simpson and then his connection to Ankeny back in the late 90s, early 2000s. But you look at those coaches in that league, the teams that you mentioned, you know, Centennial's coached by Mark High, who I consider to be one of my good friends and mentors. Coach Dave Dirks at Waukee, tremendous baseball coach, tremendous baseball mind. He's been successful everywhere he's been, whether it be Carlisle or Waukee. They're well coached, and they are probably not going to mess up very much. And Coach Barta's work speaks for itself. I don't have to elaborate there. He's got it rolling and will have it rolling for as long as he wants to be there. And that's what we're up competing against. And I'm working on trying to make myself better so we can get back to that threshold of being able to travel over to Johnston and have them worry about us sweeping them. And right now, we've got some work to do, but again, the kids are working hard. They're doing everything we ask of them. I don't know if I necessarily have a favorite to come through. I respect all those guys, but there'll be some big games. Again, you get a kid like Joey Oki out there on the mound, and Dave's got a couple guys that throw really well. So does Mike. Waukee's got a shortstop that's just a phenomenal player. I can't remember his head up, name off the top of my head, but is it Sorensen? Yeah, Sorensen. Mm-hmm. Boy, he can really play the game of baseball. He's fun to watch. And that's the great part about coaching in this league is every night you get to, whether you're coaching your own dudes or you get to go watch high-level players that are going on to the next level come night in, night out, like a Baumler, an Oki, a Sorensen, the two dudes that rake for Johnston there. It's fun to compete against that caliber of ball player.
Yeah, there's just so many good teams. I mean, right. I didn't even mention Waukee Northwest, but they yeah. found a way to beat Centennial last night. You know, Oki didn't get the loss, but they got him out of the game and yeah. found a way to win. So,
and again, what you say right there is that's the goal, right? Can you get their dude off the mound and give yourself a shot and try to wreck a bullpen? That's always our goal. And we aren't a team right now that's going to outslug you. We're going to have to move runners when we can, try to score one or two an inning. And that's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to 7 to 8 runs a game and see if we can hold them under that. And that's going to be the plan moving forwards is we get a guy on, we're probably gonna try and move him in some way, shape, or form. Hope we get a clutch hit. Might have to bunt a little bit more than I like. But it's just a tough league. And if you can't execute, things aren't going to go your way.
Well, I'm guessing the sub-state brackets will come out later this month. And with your team's record, you know, you're not going to be a 1 or 2 seed. And you certainly don't have any control over where the high school association sends you. But there's probably a good chance you could be in a bracket with a Johnson or a Centennial.
For sure. If you don't play well, if your record isn't in a place to get you a 1 or 2, you're probably going to end up in a group of 8 that has a pretty good team in it. And that is what it is. And we're just going to have to get tougher and compete and go out there and battle again. I mean, just going to have to – this is our body of work, and this is the bed we've made for ourselves, and we're going to go give our best shot in a 1-game set. I mean, you give us a 1-game set, and I got Clevedon's, Halverson, Davies, Gerstle, probably forgetting somebody. Nick Meyer's been doing a good job. We've got arms to play – 1 game, 1 set, got an athletic defense. We just keep scrapping and clawing on the offense. I don't know, kind of reminds me a little bit of that group back in Minnesota, back with Nick Punto and stuff like that. They used to call them the Piranhas. That's what I'm kind of trying to get to, just death by 1,000 paper cuts. Just keep chipping away. Good things will happen. I think they're getting there in the mindset. And all high school players, I'm like, oh, I'm going to hit a double off the wall. Right now, we're not there. So, what's our other alternative? And we're trying to figure that out together.
When you mention all those guys that have thrown well at times, I mean, you obviously don't have like a Brody Breck that everybody knows is going to get the ball in that first game. I mean, you have several different guys that could get it. Do you think who you go to might depend on the matchups?
It might, yeah. I couldn't – if you were to ask me if we were playing tomorrow, I'd have some thinking to do on that one. We're going to see how these next 19 games go, and I think we'll learn a lot about our group. These first 20 have been a lot of learning, a lot of growth. I'm hoping we take some steps forwards here. I think they're ready to start being like, oh, I've seen this. I've been here before. No worries. I got it, you know.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks a lot for coming today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate you having me.
You bet. All right, well, my final guest today is a junior shortstop for the Hawks. And as we found out last week, he can also pitch a little bit. That's something we'll talk about here shortly. But he's clearly one of the leaders of the team. He is currently batting .229 with 1 home run, 4 doubles, and 14 RBIs. He is Kinnick Voss. Kinnick, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet. Well, this is your second appearance on the podcast. You were on last fall during the football season, and that's where I want to start with you. You were a second-team all-district pick as a defensive back for the Hawks, and you helped the team to a 9-4 record and a runner-up finish in Class 5A. But I know after the season, you had to deal with an injury, and that's what prevented you from wrestling over the winter. So it was a shoulder surgery they had, right?
Yeah, I had a surgery on my left labrum about a week and a half after the state championship game.
Was that tough to sit out that wrestling season?
Yeah, it was. It was good to give the body a little break, just to get the rest of my body healthy. Obviously, the shoulder took a couple steps back, but as far as the rest of the body, it was nice to get it feeling 100%.
So the recovery must have went okay from that, I assume so, since you've been playing every game this year.
Yeah, yep. It's been going pretty well. Obviously, pretty sore sometimes. Wasn't really able to swing it at all before the season. Had like two or three at bats, maybe before I actually had to go over to Pleasant Valley and play, but just getting back into it has been good.
Let's talk about your outing on the mound at Urbandale on Thursday. You know, how surprised were you when Coach asked you to take the ball?
Well, I figured it might be an option with how much pitching we had left, but certainly wasn't something I was expecting at the beginning of the year. But I was thrilled for the opportunity.
Well, I wasn't there for the second game, so I didn't see you pitch. Now, had you been practicing your pitching at all, or did you just have to go out there and wing it?
I threw about five pitches in early February, maybe, off the mound to see how hard I could throw a baseball now. But other than that, I have not done any bullpens or anything.
So what was your strategy when out there? What pitches were working for you?
Well, I threw 38 fastballs and two knuckleballs.
Uh-huh.
And I went out there and just had a lot of fun. I got a big wiffle ball league, and I was kind of just sitting on the mound, acting like I was playing wiffle ball, having a blast with my buddies, and yeah.
Well, I asked Coach this question. I'll ask you, too. You know, how important was it for you guys to win that game? If you had lost a seventh game in a row, you know, how crippling would that have been? Would it have been tough to come back from that?
For sure. That's we hadn't really been blown out at all this year. I think we've played pretty tough with just about everyone. And to take a big loss like that would have been tough, but just important to get one and hopefully get back on the right track.
Well, I saw the last few innings of the first game on Thursday, but I missed the home run that you hit, which was your second career varsity homer. So did you get a pitch that you were looking for, and did you know right away that you had hit it out?
Well, with my power, I can't be for sure that anything I hit goes out, but 2-0 fastball right there, and just saw it and hit it. I wasn't trying to really do too much.
Well, I didn't talk to Coach on the podcast about your trip to Davenport on Saturday, but you guys bounced back from a 7-5 loss to Davenport Central with a 16-1 win over Davenport West in five innings. But Coach told me yesterday that even though your team, you know, cruised to that victory against West, you kind of had a rough game in the field at shortstop. You know, but he stressed to me that he wasn't too worried about it because he knew that it had been a long week for all you guys. So it was just one of those days that you kind of had to forget about and move on?
For sure. It's baseball. Like Coach said, it's a funny game. Stuff like that will happen. But if you bounce back, so what, next pitch, it's all good.
Well, last year you batted 351 as a sophomore, and you were named to the CIML Conference third team. You know, you aren't quite putting up the same kind of numbers yet this season, but, you know, have you struggled a little bit, or are you just running into some tough luck? Because I know sometimes in baseball that can be the case.
I feel like beginning of the year I was struggling, hadn't seen very many at-bats. So I think it's starting to come around. It's a process. It's not going to happen overnight, but over time it'll come, and I think I'm getting there, and yeah.
Well, you had that home run the other night, and then you did go 2-for-4 with a double and a run scored last night, so it seems like maybe you're trending in the right direction.
For sure.
Well, we talked to the coach about your schedule for the rest of the week, you know, which includes a doubleheader tomorrow at Dowling. Do you feel like this is a pretty important week for you guys to start building some momentum for the postseason?
Absolutely. I think we've been right there as a team, and I think we're all pretty antsy to go out and win some ball games. I think all year we've been telling each other, oh, we're right there, we're going to be there, and then we just keep finding ways to lose. Some teams find ways to win, and this first half of the season we've found ways to lose. So I think it's imperative this week that we start being a team that find ways to win instead of the vice versa. So we're excited to go out there. I mean, we all love playing ball. So,
where do you feel like this team needs to improve the most in order to reach its potential in the postseason?
I don't. It's like Coach said, it's an approach thing for sure, and it usually just seems to be one thing every game. Beginning of the year, we were letting a lot of free passes on walks, maybe even swinging a little better. Recently, it's been can't quite scratch across the runs. I think we just need to come together and just like I said earlier, just find a way to win. And that's really where our identity is going to be. You've got to be scrappy and just get it done.
Well, last year, you guys were one win away from earning a trip to the state tournament. Do you feel like this team, you know, is capable of going on a run and perhaps, you know, surprising some people there in the postseason?
Oh, absolutely. This team has a lot of potential, and I think we knew that from the beginning. We were excited to get out there. Obviously, first 21 games didn't go how we had it planned in our head, but it's baseball. Anything can happen. Everyone gets to dance in the playoffs, and that's really the goal, is just to be playing our best baseball in July. And I think we can go to state championship game because we can beat anyone. Our problem right now is we can also lose to anyone. So I think we're gonna be there when it matters.
Well, Kenny, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you about your future plans. I may have asked you back in November, but I don't remember. You know, I assume you'd like to play a sport in college. Have you decided which one you want to play yet? And have you looked at any schools?
Yeah, I'll probably play baseball somewhere, wherever that lands me. I'll probably probably start thinking about it even more after my junior year concludes. But yeah, I'll probably be playing baseball.
All right, Kenny. Well, thanks a lot for coming today. I appreciate it, and good luck the rest of the season.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients, you're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We are constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I want to thank my guests again for coming in today. We had Coldwell Banker Realtor Tom Butler, along with Ankeny baseball coach Joe Balvans and junior shortstop Kinnick Voss. I appreciate the time from all of those folks. And come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast.